Frank Sinatra Jr. Nice. But he ain't the master. I mean, he can sing, Curtis. But it's not the breaking up the syllables of a word to mimic the orchestra. We need to play one of his father's songs next so we can compare. But it's nice. But it's not the real deal. It's hard. It's hard when you're the son named Junior to follow in that footstep. All right, joining us now. Oh, my God, I'm so excited. Howard, thanks so much for waking up early to be with us.
My pleasure, Dr. Clapper. Thanks for having me.
Your hamburger stand that your dad built, the great Marty, 1959, and now you are in charge. You're an example where you took what your dad did and made it even better. You're built on what your dad did. But I want to hear a little bit about the story. How did your dad come up with the idea? How did it all happen to make a hamburger stand on Pico next to the fire station near Rancho Park? We'll get into the combo in a second, but take us to the beginning of your dad coming up with this dream and making it come true.
Well, actually, my dad was in another business, and him and my mom decided to take a ride to the beach, and they were driving down Pico Boulevard, and as they passed this little hamburger stand, they saw a for rent sign. So they decided to call. The people that were in there were going out of business.
Wow.
And they took the opportunity, got a lease, and moved forward with the business.
No experience, no nothing, just inspired.
That is correct. From the start, didn't know anything about the business, took it on, it was a challenge, and they did it.
And the first day, the first week, the first month, what do you remember? Is your dad still alive?
No, he isn't. He passed away about 20 years ago.
Okay. What did he tell you about the first day, the first week, some of the blips in the initiation of this business?
Yeah, it was a whole different start for him. He got into something he knew nothing about. So he just walked in the door, and basically he started taking over and doing it his way. And he learned as he went.
Uh-huh.
My mom was with him side by side. I was very young.
Wow.
And that's the way the business started.
Now tell us about, there's a customer who walks in who can't decide whether to have a cheeseburger or a hot dog and says, why don't you combine? Tell us about the beginnings of one of the greatest. I had one last night. It was like one of the greatest things you can put in your mouth in Los Angeles.
Thank you. Yes, we had customers that would come up and they couldn't make up their mind if they wanted a hamburger or a hot dog. So my dad came up with a creation. Why don't we give you both? So he put the hamburger patty and then he sliced the foot-long Vienna hot dog down the middle, cut in half, put on top of the hamburger. And that was the original combo before any of the major, you know, places had what they call a combo with their fries and their drink.
Now, when you're dealing in a business, Howard, that is so much based on few ingredients, right? You're talking about Vienna beef hot dog. You're talking about the meat for the burger. You're talking about the cheese, the bun, the onions, or whatever it is that you have there. The only way you have success is if you have the best and reliable that it tastes the same every time you do it. So do the hot dogs come from Chicago? Where does the beef come from? What kind of cheese do you use? Tell me exactly about the ingredients.
Yes, well, we make our patties fresh daily. We get our meat from Bob's Market, ground meat, and we make the patties. The hot dogs do come from Chicago, from Vienna Sausage.
Wow.
They ship them out directly to us. There's very few places in the city left that are actually using Vienna since they closed up their plant that was here in Los Angeles.
Hmm.
But we have been with them for so long that I made a decision to stick with them because I just don't like to change anything.
Right.
And that's basically, we use, you know, the finest quality we can, and that's what's really kept us in business.
You know, somehow, some way, and the reason I knew to get a hold of you is I remember meeting you and you were still, this has got to be in the 90s, still working the grill And you told me about your dad at that time that he retired to New Jersey, which I had never heard of anybody ever retiring to New Jersey. Usually you go to Florida, not to New Jersey. And I, to this day, I'm like, there's actually a guy who went to New Jersey to retire. But some way, somehow, you've picked a staff to work there that has continued to engage the neighborhood. It's actually a pleasure to stand online to order from your hamburger stand because it's such a joy to see happy people waiting to get this food. And somehow Geraldo, I think his name is just delightful.
Well, thank you. This is something that's very important to us. We have repeat customers for 60 years. Mm-hmm. People that are coming once a week, twice a week, constantly, mm-hmm. and they get to know our staff, they get to know our product, mm-hmm. and it's a home, very homey environment where people can come, get quality food, and be treated right.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, so many businesses, Kate Manolini, it's right next to Cedars, it'll come to me, but so many of these iconic places that you want to go and eat in Los Angeles, particularly in the food business, you get these real estate people that come in, they buy the property, jack up the rent three times, and now you can't go to Kate Manolini, and I can't go to, you know, the restaurants that I'm used to going to, except we can always go to Marty's because your dad had the foresight to buy the land. So nobody's pushing you around anywhere. Do you remember when that moment occurred?
Yeah, actually, we were tenants, and we were in there for, I'd say, about 15 years, roughly. Mm-hmm. And the people that owned the property came to us and said they were going to sell the property, and we had the first opportunity to buy it. At the time, the price was quite high for what it was, mm-hmm. but we had established a business there by that point, so we took on the responsibility of that added payment and moved forward. And had we not done that, we would have been probably gone maybe 20, 30 years ago.
Wow.
Because the value of the property is greatly increased over all the years.
Oh, my God. And the fact that you want to continue it, I mean, you could cash out. You could have a nice life, but you feel you're attached to that property. You feel attached to that business, and to some extent, you probably feel extra special being the son carrying on the dream that your dad had, right?
Absolutely. There's people that come up every day still asking about my dad. It just gives me a pride and a joy to be able to talk about it, talk to some of the old customers. There's people that haven't been there for years and moved away and come back and can't believe we're still there. And give me memories of what they experienced with my mom and my dad from a very long time ago. And it gives me a lot of joy. There's pride in that, in the ownership of a business that your family established and started many, many years ago.
It's just the most beautiful thing, Howard, to be able to go there like I did last night. And I looked on my phone and it said you're going to close at 6 and I'm in surgery. And I got for research for the show, I wanted to go. I didn't know I'd be speaking to you, which is an amazing pleasure. But I'm figuring, okay, it's 5:38. I'm leaving Cedars. It says it closes at 6. You know what's going to happen? I'm going to get there at 6 o'clock and they're going to tell me, sorry, like the airline, the door is closed. You can't get on the plane. You know what? I parked the car. It was 6 o'clock, and they said, what would you like? It was amazing. So to feel like you're doing more than a business, I've learned this much after 61 years, Howard. You want two things in your life. You want things that are timeless and things that are priceless. Whatever it is that this business generates, money cannot buy it. That you can actually have people still talk about your dad and you can feel that legacy going on has got to be the most priceless thing that you can have in your life.
Absolutely. That's the joy. That's the joy part of the business. Absolutely.
All right, Howard.
Memories.
What a pleasure to have you join us. Free orthopedic surgery for the rest of your life. I'm happy to take care of you like you take care of the whole neighborhood of Rancho Park. And I will make sure that the listeners come right. Not that you need the business. You got plenty of business. But, boy, you're going to get a lot more because a lot of people listen to this show. They love when I talk about medicine, Howard. They love when I talk about sports. But they really love when I talk about food. And your place is one of my favorite places in L.A. to get a cheeseburger and particularly to get the combo.
Well, thank you so much, and I just want to tell you, your show is fantastic. I've been listening for years, and thank you for all the loyalty you showed my staff and my store over many generations.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Howard. Well, that's the great Howard. Go visit Marty's Hamburger Stand next to the Fire Station and the Shell Station on Pico Boulevard near the Rancho Park Golf Course. You will not be disappointed. All right, coming up next, we'll do some clap revision. I've got to tell you, I have to tell you what I found in this woman's hip yesterday and how some arthritis attacks cartilage and how you got to look out for that. And I'll explain. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show. The number is 877-710-ESPN. The great Frank Sinatra, Luck Be a Lady Tonight, when he speaks and sings, emphasizing different syllables, it's magical. Just love it. Plus, it takes me back. Just like Howard talking about his dad, Marty. Listening to Frank Sinatra takes me back to thinking about my dad. Yesterday in surgery, woman couldn't walk, limping, pain at night, rolling over in bed, can't put shoes and socks on, flight of stairs is intimidating, comes to see me. And you can see the space between the ball and the socket on the x-ray has diminished. And that's because on an x-ray, we only see the bone because it has mineral, calcium. We can't see cartilage. We can't see tendons. We can't see the muscle. So if the cartilage wears out, it looks like the two bones are touching each other, getting closer. And that's what arthritis is. You see the joint space narrowing. But when you open up as a surgeon, which is what I am, the joint, sometimes you will see the joint is just dried out. Bone on bone, rubbing, just angry looking, but no fluid, no redness. It's just the brake pad wore through into the rotor. The tires got bald. Big deal. Osteoarthritis. But sometimes, which is what I saw yesterday, it looks like the body had a gigantic mosquito bite or something got in your eye and your eye got red and swollen. That the inside of the joint is red and swollen and inflamed like a mosquito bite that just blew up the back of your hand. This inflammatory response. It's not rheumatoid arthritis, but it's a kind of arthritis that decides one day to attack itself. Your body decides to attack itself, and it's vicious. The fun part for me as a surgeon is the relief of pain in those patients is dramatic because you'll have some discomfort after surgery. Listen, you had an operation, even though it's minimally invasive and we don't cut the muscle and all those beautiful things. People go home the same day now from a hip replacement, which is shocking, but they do now. But the relief of pain when you have that inflammatory arthritis versus regular arthritis is impressive. And that's really why it is such a privilege and a joy to be a surgeon, to be able to give people a pain-free existence. It's more than just getting rid of the pain. They get their life back. They can play tennis and ski and just get to be energized again. Go to Yosemite and walk around and see the bear and the deer and the coyotes like I saw. Was that fun? And the few days before, I was in New York visiting Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith on the set of First Take. They were so gracious and great to me. It was so much fun. And in the midst of it, I came home on Sunday and went to the Green Bay Packer Rams game. What a great, and went surfing in the morning. Are you kidding? It was amazing. Probably the best week of my life. That's why there was a best of last Saturday, so I apologize. All right, let's do some clap revision. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to Joe in Long Beach. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, Doc.
Hi, Joe.
How are you doing this morning?
Good. I'm doing great. Have you been listening? You can tell how good I'm doing. I'm talking about Marty's Hamburgers.
Yes. So about a month ago, I called my daughter, a softball player. She has some pain and popping sensation in her throwing shoulder.
Yes.
You advised me to get x-rays. So we got x-rays of both shoulders. They were negative.
Okay.
She had an MRI of the throwing shoulder only.
Good.
Which came back, the short impression is normal MRI.
Okay.
So they didn't really find anything that would have caused the popping, but, you know, she's kind of been shut down for a month, and she's going to be shut down as far as competitive throwing for another month, but mm-hmm. we still don't know what the cause of the pain was, but it seems to have gone away, and as I say, she's not going to be doing any more competitive throwing until December.
So let me tell you what usually is the story. Dr. Ranawat, my teacher, who I saw in New York, he's 84 years old. I actually put on Twitter, if you want to see what Dr. Ranawat looks like, you got two bald-headed guys standing next to each other. One's 84 and the other's 61. It's a great picture that I'm very proud of. But he used to say the eyes don't see what the mind doesn't know. So when you get an x-ray and you get an MRI, which is read as normal, and yet you have a daughter who you trust, who's not trying to get secondary gain and complain for no good reason, but she legitimately has something the matter with her shoulder, and the studies are saying they're normal, then the eyes don't see what the mind doesn't know. That means what the hell is going on that could cause a normal MRI in a kid that is still causing pain? How could you have the two? And the answer is this. Stretching of structures. They're not torn. They're stretched. They're irritated by the stretch. And that can cause pain in a shoulder. You know, the Dodger pitcher Urias ended up having a tear in the capsule of his shoulder. Not a labral tear, not a rotator cuff tear. It's really was more of a stretch that ultimately created a small tear that was fixed. But you can actually go one level below that where you stretch the capsule, but you didn't tear it, and all the studies are going to be negative, and yet it hurts like hell when you throw. And that is really what happened to your daughter. And here's the best news for that, Joe. These injuries, which cause the pain and the popping, will heal on their own. The absolute correct thing to do is to shut it down. Let it heal. Let it scar. She is like, as Dr. Dine said, like a salamander. Young kids with an injury like that get to grow a new tail. If you pull the salamander's tail off, they grow a new one. She will thicken and tighten her capsule. But I will tell you this. You better look carefully, you being the parent, at what may have led to that problem so it doesn't happen again. So the great Woody Allen said, those who can't do, teach. Those who can't teach, teach Jim. Be careful of who the coach is. Be careful who the manager is. Be careful who the trainer is. Somebody is letting her do too much of one throw, too much of one activity that led to that injury. That's what you should do and take advantage of this injury that happened to your daughter so it doesn't happen again. So less throws, less whatever the protocol was, you must modify it because her shoulder does not appreciate the mechanics of what was done. Capiche?
Okay. Capisco.
Okay. All right, Joe. Thanks for listening. We appreciate the loyalty.
Thank you, doctor.
All right, young man, I want you to do me a favor since I helped you and your daughter. Today, I want you to find a total stranger and do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
All right, doctor.
All right, young man. All right, let's go to Vincent in Redondo. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, doctor. How are you?
All right, Vincent. How old are you?
I just turned 30.
Mazel tov. What do you do for a living?
I work in consulting.
What the hell does that mean? Do you consult? Do you consult for streetwalkers? Do you consult for the art business? Do you? What does consulting mean?
You know, a little bit of healthcare actually, but a little bit all over the place.
Okay.
I ask myself what I really do every day.
I'm going to use that. I'm going to make a card right now. Forget about all the things that I do. I'm going to doctor. I'm not even say doctor. Robert Clapper, consultant. This is what I am. I love it. I want you to make a card, Vincent, that says Maven. This is a Yiddish term for a consultant, for an expert. What do you do? I'm a maven. About what? About everything. I know a little bit about everything. I love it. Good for
excellent.
You. What did your father do for a living?
He was a an auto body repair worker, so he was a very skilled
auto body
painter, actually, when it came to, well, for cars specifically. So did a lot of classic classic car body work and that kind of stuff.
When he came home for dinner, did he have his clothes on and had paint smeared all over the clothes?
Every day. And that was that was before he went back out into our garage to keep working.
Did your mom have a problem with him sitting at the dinner table with a shirt that had paint all over it?
No. You got used to that auto body paint smell. It was like, it's almost a kind of sentimental thing at one point.
Wow. Isn't that great? Did he take a shower before he sat down for dinner, or did he come home tired and sweaty and he sat down and ate dinner?
Yeah, no shower. I think that came later.
My father used to, you get a load of this. This is how they didn't know. I remember, and I would sometimes on the weekends, I have to help him. He would get tar all over because he did roofs. He did everything he could. And he'd have that black tar all over his hands. And first, he introduced me to lava soap. Here, Robbie, clean your hands, you know, with the lava soap. But if the lava soap didn't get the tar off, you know what he would do? Here, Robbie, this is the best thing to use. Kerosene. He'd wash his hands with kerosene, which, by the way, and he never got cancer. He lived to be 89 years old, thanks to my mother being a nurse. But can you imagine telling your son you should wash your hands with kerosene? It's like the most toxic thing in the world. But let me tell you, you want to get tar off your hands? Wash your hands with kerosene, man. That stuff comes off. Oh, my God.
Simpler times.
Simpler times. Isn't that a beautiful thing to be a part of a simpler life? Now it's this damn telephone, this cell phone. You're like glued to it. It's terrible. It's taken over our lives. All right. How can I help you, Vincent? I tortured you enough here.
So I had a lateral meniscus tear and some cartilage damage in my right knee.
Yes.
That I had gotten looked at back in May, and I actually ended up doing, they scoped my knee, and then they gave me a PRP injection as well to try to help with the cartilage.
Yeah.
So I've been doing the rehab, you know, physical therapy, and then just on my own, a lot of strengthening exercises, a lot of stretching, rolling out the IT bands, all that good stuff. I think some improvement. To me, it still feels pretty unstable. Mm-hmm. Overall, I think there's a mental aspect of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to see. There's a couple options I think that I have. I obviously to keep strengthening, keep looking for ways to switch it up and make sure that I'm hitting all the different areas. I had been talked to about stem cells as well, which I think there's still a little bit of unknown with that.
Correct.
Wanted to see if there's anything that you might recommend that I really focus on, in terms of continuing the rehab.
Do you listen to the show?
I do.
Okay.
I do. So one thing that came to mind is the pool, right? Walking around in the pool.
I will tell you this. Here, I'm going to give you a little more information. If I see 100 people for their knees, 95 of them with meniscus tears, and they're 30 years old like you, 95 of them, okay, forget about majority, 60 versus 40. I'm talking 95 of them will have a tear to their medial meniscus, like Lonzo Ball's side, for example, the meat of the big toe side of your knee. Only 5 out of 100 are going to have the lateral side, like Russell Westbrook or Jordan Farmar or Matt Barnes. They had lateral. It's much rarer to have a lateral meniscus tear. And guess what lives on the lateral side of our knee joints, the little toe side of knee joints? The nerve, the peroneal nerve is there. So do you have any numbness or tingling as well?
I do, actually.
There you go. Okay.
In my foot.
That's a problem. So something fishy. Already, you're in the 5% group. You're not in the 95%. You're in the 5%, the minority, with your lateral meniscus tear. So I would be very curious. How long ago did you have the scope?
In May.
All right. So that's a long time ago. You should not be having these kind of symptoms still, in my opinion, to this extent, particularly with the numbness. And I would be curious if there's more going on the lateral side of your joint, maybe a meniscal cyst. I mean, I don't know, but information, you're a consultant, you're a maven. Information empowers us. It's been long enough, and you're not hitting it out of the park yet, in my opinion, and you don't have to do this tomorrow, but you absolutely, Vincent, should get a new MRI after the surgery now that has been done to see what's happened with your persistent symptoms, if there's a reason for it. I don't want cortisone in there. I don't want stem cells or PRP. And yes, I wrote a book with Linda Yue called Heal Your Knees, all about the pool. And I love the pool and the bike to rehab because you're still in the rehab period from your surgery. But something, I can only do this through the radio waves. Something tells me, Vincent, that you should get a new MRI of your knee. And if you do, and you don't need a fancy dye injection, just get a regular MRI, you can call me with the report and I'll translate it for you. But that's what I think you're going to need ultimately to figure out what's up with this knee, because that you have numbness and tingling from a lateral meniscus tear. I wonder if there's a cyst. I wonder if there's something else going on. And I may even want you, in addition to the MRI, to get a neurologist to see you as well, to do a nerve study, a nerve conduction EMG. Just thinking off the top of my head. That's what I would recommend. Okay.
Okay, that's awesome. I really appreciate it.
All right, Vincent, I want you to do me a favor. Find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
That I can do.
All right, young man. God bless. Thanks for calling. All right, Warriors, we'll take a break. We'll pay some bills. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710.
Oh, do I love this song. This is Paul Simon. Trouble already started in his life when he moved from New York City early in his career to England, to London. Had to sleep in the streets, in the subway stations. Made enough money to eat by playing the guitar. They call him Buskers. But he met a girl, a British girl, named Kathy. And he wrote this song about her. And then he went back to the U.S. without her. I guess you need trouble. We all have to live with trouble, but how you harness the trouble to create great things in your life. The ultimate trouble, though, for a surgeon is something called a blood clot. So I couldn't think of a better person to explain what the hell that is than the great Dr. Aaron Weinberg. Aaron, thanks so much for waking up early to be with us.
Oh, Dr. Clapper, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me. I first like to start off by saying I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
It's incredible the way you combine important medical issues, sports, you know.
Thank you.
Other trivia. It's really, really great show. So
thank you
for having me.
And my pleasure. First, we need to learn who the hell you are. What did your father do for a living? Where'd you grow up? What's your story? Where'd you go to school?
Sure. I am a Southern California product. Grew up in L.A., born and raised.
Laker fan?
Absolutely.
Don't say Clippers. I'm hanging up right now.
No, okay. Clippers.
Cool.
I bleed, you know.
Purple and gold.
But Dodgers, big Dodger fan. And, to UCLA, did my training in Southern California. And then now I practice at Cedars-Sinai.
How about your dad? What did he do for a living?
He's an attorney.
Uh-oh.
He's a good kind of attorney.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, he's very supportive of going into medicine and my career. So
that's fantastic.
Can't thank him enough.
So teach us a little bit. If I cut myself, I start to bleed. They call it a cascade, a complement cascade. And there's something called a platelet that gets involved. Take us to the basics. Simplify of exactly what it is, bleeding becoming a scab. What exactly is happening?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And I think, you know, we've all experienced it where we're rushing in the morning and we're shaving quickly and, you know, we nick ourselves and then we get frustrated because we can't put on that dress shirt or those pants, you know, for, you know, another, you know, 15, 20 minutes. It can be frustrating, or we wad up some toilet paper and, you know, put it on our necks. But what really happens when you cut yourself is your body's in this natural balance of homeostasis, which is just a fancy term. That means you have a constant balance between clotting and bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do nick yourself, when you shift your body's direction of things, a whole series, a cascade of things go into effect. And you have these cells called platelets, which are sticky little cells that go to the area of a cut and try to plug up that blood vessel that's bleeding. You then have a whole bunch of other proteins and molecules that they're known as clotting factors, which also go to the clot and try to break that up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the body's kind of in a constant state of flux between forming clots when you need it and then breaking them down when you don't. And the problem happens when you shift that balance towards clotting.
So if a person has a knee replacement or a hip replacement, why would they all of a sudden, I get that they bleed and they make a scab and they need the platelets to heal from the surgery, but why in the world would their other leg that you didn't even touch decide in the pipe to make a cork like from a wine bottle in one of the veins? Why does that happen? Why does a deep vein thrombosis or a blood clot with no injury, nothing going on, all of a sudden form in the other leg?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And this is a field that's constantly evolving. We're doing a lot of research in this field right now. But I think the first thing I'd like to say is that there's a lot of excellent surgeons out there, and I want people to be aware this is no fault of the surgeon. Mm-hmm. It just is one of those, you know, post-operative complications that can happen. And we warn people about this when they go in for surgery.
Better known as trouble.
Trouble. We, you know, I think there's definitely a strong association that we found in the field between not moving around and forming blood clots. Mm-hmm. So when you're laying in bed for 3 days straight, maybe you have the flu, you don't get out of bed, or you're on a long plane ride to Europe, or you're in the operating room where you're laying for, you know, maybe a 5-6 hour surgery, and then after surgery, you're laying in bed as well.
Mm-hmm.
We know that when that happens, blood does not flow very well through the legs. And actually, kind of tying back to your story on England, they first actually made this association between an increased risk of blood clots in the legs and not moving around during World War II, during the Blitz, when the Germans were bombing London. And people were in these, you know, bunkers, just staying there for hours on end. They were sitting in these lawn chairs in these bunkers, and it was causing some compression of the back of their legs, and there wasn't good blood flow. And during that period of time, there was actually an association that was established between not moving around very much and having an increased risk of blood clots in the legs or deep vein thrombosis. So what they had people do, they had people actually moving around more, laying down flat, which helped, you know, kind of some of the circulation, the return of the blood to the lungs, and they noticed that they had less blood clots after doing that. So there's definitely an association between not moving around and blood clots forming. I think also during surgery, your body has more inflammation, and inflammation may also play a role in the formation of blood clots.
So I want the listener to understand that not moving around, what it's really saying is if your muscles are not firing, like your calf muscles, if you're just sitting rather than walking, or like those guards at Buckingham Palace, which are paid to be on shifts for 8 hours and with those big black furry hats and not move, the reason their pants are so baggy is that what you don't see is underneath their slacks, they are doing toe raises, because they would get a blood clot if they just stood there for 8 hours. They are taught to pump their calf muscles, because the muscle squeezing is ultimately how the flow goes through the veins with the, to keep it moving, you fire your muscles. So the key is sitting around or lying around in surgery, the muscles are not compressing the vein. It's not pumping the blood back to the heart.
Exactly. I think you explained that very well. And the other component too, you have these small little valves in the veins, which help direct the blood back to the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that maybe around those valves is where these blood clots start forming.
Now,
when people are not moving and circulating that blood well.
We're talking to the great Dr. Aaron Weinberg, who's an expert in pulmonary embolus and blood clots. Is there any research? I don't know anything about this, so I'd just love to ask the question. Are people looking into, I get it, that the clot forms near the valve. I totally get that. Why does it break off and then travel as an embolus? Because I imagine some just clump up and give you a swollen leg, but some of them decide to break off and travel. Do we understand why that may occur? One travels and the other stays put?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, too. And I think there's still a lot of work being done. We don't know when or why at certain points in time these blood clots break off from the legs and go to the lungs. And we view this condition as a spectrum of the same disease. So over 95% of the time, blood clots in the lungs or pulmonary embolisms originate in the legs. That's the most common site for them to start. They break off from the legs at, you know, maybe the maybe the person started walking. You know, we've had patients who landed in LAX after a long flight, and they're walking to the baggage carousel, and all of a sudden they start developing symptoms of blood clots, of pulmonary embolisms, and maybe at that point where they're walking fast, you know, something dislodges and breaks off. So I think what I want your listeners to realize is that this is not an orphan disease. This is a very common condition. Over 1 million people a year are diagnosed in the U.S. alone with this condition. And unfortunately, over 100,000 people die of it per year. It's the third leading cause of death behind heart disease and stroke. But we're doing a bad job of you know, catching some of these cases as well.
When you get on a plane and you're going to sit for a while, first of all, what should someone do mechanically to prevent a blood clot for a long plane ride? Do you wear stockings? Do you have a bulkhead seat? You get up and walk a lot? Do you take aspirin? What do we do? And why does the aspirin work on a blood clot?
We definitely have an association between flying, especially long flights over 5 to 6 hours and longer, and the formation of blood clots. However, with that said, you know, a lot of times I don't want people, your listeners, to get scared about this, because a lot of times patients that do develop blood clots on a plane may have another underlying cause as well. There's, you know, millions of business people, pilots that fly every day in this country and never develop blood clots. So there may be another factor that's playing into this that we don't realize at the time. However, with that said, we do know there's an association. So when you are on a plane, definitely recommend getting up, walking around. Unfortunately, the seats are getting smaller and smaller, and they used to call this economy class syndrome, because people would just be, you know, cramped in their seats, not getting up. They'd have compression of the back of their legs. There may be something else involved with air travel, such as pressurization, the altitude. We do know that, you know, when you take your shoes off on a plane and then you put them back on at landing, they may feel a little tighter. So there's something about the circulation when you're on a plane. People tend to get dehydrated on airplanes. Maybe they drink alcohol. Also, the pressurization and the recycled air tends to dehydrate people. So the best thing you can do is get up frequently, walk in the aisles. No one will think you're crazy. Walk up and down. Stay hydrated. Don't drink too much alcohol. Those are probably the best things you can do. Now, some of our patients who have had blood clots before or are at high risk of forming blood clots, sometimes we'll put them on a blood thinner to thin their blood before they get on a plane to prevent blood clots from forming. But that's a special patient population. Not everybody needs to be on it.
Why do birth control pills?
Aspirin.
Why, Dr. Weinberg, why do birth control pills predispose people to blood clots?
Yeah, especially with more advanced age, and if you smoke, it definitely increases your risk. There's something about estrogen that increases your risk of blood clots. Patients on hormone replacement therapy are at increased risk. Even obesity, when you're overweight, you produce more estrogen in your body, both men and women, and that may increase your risk of blood clots. Pregnancy and the immediate postpartum state is another risk factor. About one in every 1,600 pregnancies develop blood clots. So it's a common condition. It's not just people in a hospital laying in a hospital bed. A lot of people get this. And there may also be a genetic predisposition that people just don't realize at the time. Their genes may prefer to clot as opposed to, you know, break up clots. And those patients may get these blood clots. It's a disease that a lot of people get, young people, healthy people, active people. This is a sports show. There's been a number of professional athletes who have gotten blood clots. So it's certainly not a disease just of people who are immobile.
The former Laker, right? Jerome Kersey?
Jerome Kersey, and these are all public stories. I'm not violating any privacy laws by saying this, but he died after a knee surgery.
Right.
And then there's been other athletes, you know, Serena Williams, Chris Bosh, Katie Hoff was an Olympic swimmer who developed blood clots. The rapper Heavy D died of a blood clot. So it's a common condition.
So I got about a minute left, Dr. Weinberg. What's the future? Melting them away, suctioning them out, using X-ray to see them? Where's your research in all of this?
Yeah, that's, you know, I think by far the best thing you can do for a blood clot is to get quickly on a blood thinner. And there's a number of blood thinners on the market. I'm not going to go into any detail on those today. But we are doing a lot for patients who are really sick when they come into the hospital. The problem with the blood clot, it plugs up the arteries in the lungs, and it puts a lot of stress on the heart, and people go into heart failure. It's like putting your finger over a hose, and you feel all that pressure. Your heart feels that pressure as it tries to pump blood. So we have to intervene quickly sometimes. Sometimes we extract clot with devices. Sometimes we have to go to surgery. Sometimes we break up clot quickly with clot busting medications. But this field's evolving a lot, and you know, if I can do one quick plug, we're lucky at Cedars-Sinai to have a multidisciplinary team. I work with one of the world experts, Dr. Vic Tapson, and also another great PE expert, Oren Friedman, as well as other specialists to really tackle this disease, both in the hospital as well as long-term, because there's a lot of outpatient decisions that need to be made, and we're doing a bunch of clinical trials and research to try to evolve the field. So what I tell my patients is what we do today may not be what we do, you know, a few months from now. The field's evolving very quickly.
You know, Dr. Weinberg, I don't know those other doctors, even though they're at Cedars, but I know you. And what's really the reason I had you come on today is the very first time I talked to you, I could feel the compassion that you have for patients and for people. And you truly became a doctor for all the right reasons. And it's a blessing to know you and keep doing what you're doing. You really make us all proud. And thanks for getting up early to join us. We really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the time. And thanks for doing the excellent work that you're doing.
Okay.
It's really a great show.
My pleasure. My pleasure. All right, Warriors. Coming up next, the clinic will be open. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on ESPN LA 710.
Oh, what a song, George. Great George Briones with me today. The great Steve Paulette teeing it up. I don't do it alone.
All right, the number's 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to David in Thousand Oaks. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help, David? Thanks for hanging on the line.
Hey, good morning, doctor. How you doing?
Okay, young man. What do you do for a living?
I work as a firefighter paramedic.
Oh, thank you for your work and keeping us alive. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. I enjoy listening to your shows on the weekends when I drive home from work.
You like the art, you like the medicine, you like the sports, you like the food. What do you like?
I'll tell you exactly. You have a gift of painting a picture on the radio.
Thank you.
As far as it's a 3D type picture that you paint as well. And the only guy I can really think of that used to do that for me was the great Vin Scully.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I have to adjust my headset. My head is expanding. Thank you very much for that, David.
Yeah, that's a big one to be compared to him. But, yeah, you do have that gift. I just enjoy it. And I looked up that Milkmaid as I was sitting here just kind of looking it up. And you're right. It's that one pouring of the milk that's coming out there that kind of makes that picture realistic.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Good feat.
Yes,
well,
sir.
Thank you. All right, how can I help you? What's up?
Well, my question to you is, you know, for about 4 or 5 months now, my elbow, interior on the inside.
Your little finger side with your palm up?
That is correct.
Okay, that's the medial side. So the way we can talk turkey with each other, we have you in the position, the anatomic position, which is lying on your back and your palms are up. And so the little finger side of your elbow is the ulnar side of the elbow, the medial side, the thumb side, lateral side of your elbow is the lateral side. So we're talking about the medial side of your elbow. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, it just seems like when I bend it now, or when I have zero strength, maybe about 30% now, and when I bend it, I get this burning sensation.
In the elbow, or does it radiate forearm into your little finger in your hand?
It doesn't go too far, but it will radiate down to the forearm a little bit. Mm-hmm. But mainly it's right there in that medial side of the elbow.
And what is your sport? What do you do other than fight fires and be an EMT?
I have a beer league softball.
Do you lift weights? You go to the gym?
Yeah, I do lift weights. You know, not heavy. I'm not one of those big meatheads or anything like that.
And is it you're a righty or a lefty?
I am a lefty.
You're a lefty. And which elbow, right or left?
It's my left elbow.
Okay.
And I'm not a golfer either.
Right. I'm just wondering about your car and your truck that you drive. Do you rest the left elbow? Is this something that you're doing? So let's go to anatomy right now, okay? Because this is what I love so much about orthopedic surgery. There's no arguments. It's just know the anatomy, and that's exactly what's going on. It's not controversial. It's not like you need another opinion. This is exactly what's going on. This is how God built us. So speaking of gravity, and therefore in art, speaking of the Milkmaid and Vermeer, which was painted in 1657, and the pouring milk, like you pointed out, is gravity in art, which I love. Let's go even earlier in life to 1632 to Rembrandt, one of the greatest painters of all time, who also happened to be Dutch. I want you to Google, those of you listening, the Weekend Warriors, and you, David, to a painting to type into Google called Dr. Tulp, T-U-L-P's Anatomy Class. This is a painting that Rembrandt did, and the cadaver that the doctor, the anatomy professor, is teaching the young medical students. This is what I love, because Rembrandt did not listen to the Weekend Warrior show because it didn't exist. I wasn't born in 1632. Hey, I sometimes feel like I did, because he paints it wrong, which is apropos to what you're describing, David, because the medial side where you're having your pain, the little finger side of the elbow, palms up, is where the flexor muscles originate from. They anchor. Here's a clapper vision. If you think of the tendons as a rope, so we got a boat at a dock, the tendons are the rope, that metal cleat that's attached to the wooden dock that you tie the rope to, that cleat, that allows the rope to now connect to the dock so the boat doesn't pull away. That origin site of the muscle group, the muscles of the rope, the attachment to the bone is the dock, is that cleat, that metal cleat. That origin, that attachment is the medial epicondyle, but it's for the flexor muscles that allow you to flex your fingers and flex your wrist. They come off the medial side where you're complaining of. Look at the painting by Rembrandt of Dr. Tulp's Anatomy Class. What do you see? He's wrong. He has the muscle that the medial side extending the wrist. It's like the biggest error orthopedically in art that you'll ever see because he paints it wrong. He should know his anatomy like Michelangelo, who came, you know, 100 years before him. So you're describing what baseball pitchers deal with. You're describing what golfers have to deal with because there is a irritation. It's like two pieces of Velcro. You rip them apart. What you are doing is microscopically, and weightlifters doing too many curls, you may not think it's heavy weights, but you're microscopically pulling the Velcro apart, pulling the rope off of the cleat attaching to the dock. You're pulling the muscle off the bone, and it's called a tendonitis. It's an irritation. It's microscopic bleeding that takes place. The ulnar nerve that feeds your little finger and half of your ring finger and allows you to spread your fingers apart, that funny bone nerve is living right there. That's why when we do Tommy John surgery, by the way, we always move the nerve while we're doing the surgery to rebuild the ligament because it can be irritated so easily because it's so superficial. But that's what's going on in your particular elbow. By the way, the other side of the elbow, the thumb side, the lateral side of your elbow, when this occurs where you rip the muscle off the bone, that's a lateral epicondylitis, a lateral inflammation of the muscles. That's tennis elbow. You have the other side. So be careful. Don't let them shoot cortisone because you can get too close to the nerve and make trouble. And I hate cortisone anyway. You treat this by wearing a sleeve. Go to a sporting goods store, cheap. Get yourself an elastic neoprene sleeve like we use in wetsuits. That calms down the pull of the muscles. A lot of vitamin C in your diet, that helps you repair. That's the glue that holds collagen together to make good scar. And for a good 3-4 weeks, no weightlifting, no excessive strain to flexion. You can do range of motion, but you need to calm this down because you're clearly irritating it. Even though you may seem to you that this is no different than what I did before, I'm not the boss. You're not the boss. Your elbow is the boss. And by having pain, it means you are doing something that it doesn't like. So just taking pills and taking shots, you don't need surgery for this. This covers up the symptoms, and I hate this about medicine, because that's where the money is. That's where the drug companies make money, by taking your symptom away. I don't want to take your symptom away and have it come back once the pill or the shot wears off. I want the pain to go away, David, and not come back again. How do you do that? First, you let this rest. First, you let this feel better. And then once it does, then you begin strengthening exercises. You work these muscles in a completely different way. And the experts in doing that are physical therapists. So if this doesn't calm down 3-4 weeks by you wearing a sleeve, avoiding what's aggravating it, and it still hurts, then I need you to get an exam by an orthopedic surgeon, let them do an x-ray, and then let them send you to a physical therapist. That's what I would do, David. All right?
Yeah. Okay, doc. So, yeah, I appreciate that. And you said something in the beginning about, you know, how do you rest your elbow while driving down the road or anything like that? And I'm, you know, like most guys, window down, elbow sitting on the door. You know,
there you go. That's what you're doing. You're aggravating it by the position. And as simple as this is one thing you should try, David. This is a crazy idea, but why not? I need you to put a cushion on your seat for the next 3-4 weeks. And you say, I'm not talking about my butt. I'm not talking about my lower back, Dr. Clapper. Why should I sit on a cushion in my truck? Because that slight change in how you sit will change the angle of how you rest your elbow out the window, and that might be the subtle difference that allows you to make the pain go away.
Yeah, well, thanks, Doc. I appreciate that.
All right. And do me a favor, David. Find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
I will, sir. You have a great day, and thanks for all your advice. And thanks. Keep doing what you're doing. I love it.
All right. Thanks so much, David, for the kind words. Appreciate it. George, we're taking a break. All right, we'll take a break. We'll pay some bills. Lines are lit up. Stay on the line. I'll get to you. Clapper Vision for the clinic is open. Coming up next on the Weekend Warrior Show on ESPN LA 710.